history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories there that really ought to be told. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as we do that, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and so often we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. This time I'm in Denver, Colorado, at an American Legion Hall that has quite a bit of history itself, and the gentleman we're going to hear from has plenty of history to share. I mentioned the word education, too. That's been his life. In fact, that's kind of the family business. Glenn Stenson, 94 years old, of Denver, Colorado, our guest, a Navy veteran of World War II. But you're not from Denver originally, another part of Colorado that doesn't have quite as many people living in it?
Anyone that went through the years that I did, the Dirt Bowl and Depression and everything, and come out of that, still went on to win a war. Great people.
Tell us where your hometown in Colorado is and how to find it.
It's Holyoke, Colorado. It's 186 miles northeast of Denver. I actually grew up in a farming community of Amherst, Colorado, 10 miles northeast of Holyoke, until we moved into town when I was in the seventh grade.
And as the oldest of six kids in a farming community, that means you were probably working pretty hard, huh?
That junior do it. type thing, yeah. No, I was involved with the chores. Have to help Mom get the water hot for the clothes washing and take care of the chores and the pigs and the chickens and those things.
And I ask, it seems mundane, especially for someone who lived it, but I just think of people like your great-grandkids' age and the perspective that they have of growing up years is a little different. What was the toughest thing you had to do around the farm?
Oh, Lordy. Probably milk the little old Jersey cow whose teats were only an inch long.
You got to have good fingers for that.
You're a two-finger milker.
Do you remember, and these are the years, I mean, you said Dust Bowl and the Depression and all that. Can you help us understand what that was like, those of us who didn't live through economic times that were that dire?
Well, you know, as I think back on it, particularly when we got into school, well, first of all, I went to started out school in one-room school. One teacher and all the grades in there, and it was just a different time. The strictness, the discipline was something. You miss arithmetic problem, you're as bad as being in a Catholic school. You get your hands swatted. And then in Kansas one year, we were living with our grandparents because of the Depression. I went to a one-room school, and sometimes Grandpa would let me ride his horse to school, but usually my brother and I walked. But once the Dirt Bowl started, you'd get up and go to school in the morning. Sun would be shining at 9 o'clock. It'd be dark. Principal would say, kids, go home. So you go home, and the first thing you do when you get home, Mom hands you the water bucket and said, go down the windmill and get water. We'd soak the burlap sacks and sheets and everything in the water and hang it over the doors and the windows and everything else. Try to keep the dirt out of the house. You go to bed at night. When you woke up next morning, you knew just exactly where your head was because that was the only clean spot on the pillow.
Wow.
Those old houses, the heating wasn't good. In order to keep your feet warm at night, you'd heat rocks and put rocks wrapped in newspaper at the foot of the bed to keep your feet warm. It's just different. And yet, that was what we knew. We didn't know different.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result, we just went along and we were happy. It was tough on the women, really tough on the women. But we kids, you know, we were kids.
I imagine when you go through something like that, you probably don't take a whole lot for granted in life.
No, you don't.
And I don't know if you remember this, it's been a long time, but when you were that kid dealing with those conditions, and as you said, you didn't know any different, no big deal. Do you remember having a dream or an ambition that thought of, hey, when I grow up someday, these are the things that I'm going to do or accomplish?
Well, I had thought when I was a kid that I'd like to be a doctor. Of course, those days, as you went through high school and that, and then the war came along and changed everything. Luckily, when I did get in the Navy, I got my second choice, which was hospital corps school, and became a corpsman in the Navy, which was going to be a step to being a doctor. But then I found out once I got out of the service, in those days, you pretty well had to have another doctor sponsor you. And that was tough. So that changed my whole career path.
Well, we're going to talk about some of that. I understand you weren't a bad athlete in high school? Played a lot of sports?
I was a tall, kind of a skinny kid. In fact, when I was a freshman, I was the littlest kid in the freshman class. By the time I was a senior, I was 5'10" and weighed a mighty 135 pounds. And we played the single wing, and coach kind of liked the way I could cross block. And so he made me the pulling guard in the single wing because I could go out and crack the defensive end. And then I was also the punter. I had to learn how to kick the hard way. One year for Christmas, my mother was expecting one of my younger brothers, and we were dirt poor and couldn't afford presents. Dad had found a football cover and no bladder or anything, so he filled it with rags. And my brother and all, that was my brother next to me, that was our present. Well, in order to not break my foot when I kicked the thing, I had to learn to kick it right. And so years later, that became a real funny thing with the kids I was coaching.
I bet. Did you ever break it out or make a replica of it for them to learn?
No, never did. But some of the kids I coached later on, they say, "Coach, we hated you." "You didn't hate me. What's the matter?" "We hated you on Thursday night when we had punt return drills, and you stepped back there and started doing the punting." Because I could kick 65, 70 yards.
Wow. When's the last time you tried?
15, 20 years ago.
And you still had it?
Not quite that far, no. But I could still get off a darn good spiral.
I believe it. We were talking before I started recording here. One of my favorite veterans that I've met here in the Rocky Mountain State was Lee Kaiser up in Julesburg, Colorado. He's preserved a ton of the local history there in his old Ford garage and museum. He was a high school rival of yours?
Yeah, he and I played against each other. He was from Julesburg. He and I played against each other in football and basketball.
Was that the big rivalry there, those two schools?
Oh,
or was there another one?
No, our big rivalry was Haxton, mm-hmm. 18 miles west of Holyoke. Yeah.
What would you say the population of Holyoke was before World War II?
About 1,300. I loved to play when I was a kid. Mainly my big sport was baseball. I started playing American Legion baseball when I was in freshman high school in 1939.
What position?
Usually an outfield.
Well, and now we have the Colorado Rockies. In fact, they just got their first Hall of Famer with Larry Walker. But back then, there was no Major League Baseball out this way.
No, but we've had good baseball in Colorado. We used to have a Denver Post tournament, bring guys all in, Satchel Paige, people like that come in, the old Kansas City Monarchs. No, we had some good baseball, semi-pro baseball in those days. And then it went to Class A, the old Denver Bears, and there are still a lot of people around Denver that remember the good old Denver Bears.
Well, what I was wondering was, you know, if you're the kid growing up in rural Colorado when there isn't a major league team with this big presence out here, who was your baseball hero back then?
The Dizzy yeah? Dean. Yeah, we had kids, we'd get together once in a while with our old taped up balls and taped up bats and try to choose up sides. Well, if you ate grape nut flakes, 3 box tops and a quarter, you could get a Dizzy Dean pin. Or if you ate grape nuts, 3 box tops and a quarter, you could get a Babe Ruth pin. Well, that's the way we chose up teams. And, you know, we were in our overalls and whatever. We didn't know what uniforms were. But we had fun. We played just as hard. And I sometimes think we learned our skills a little different because we had to learn them the hard way. We didn't have anyone teaching us.
Well, and I don't want to leave anything out from those years, but I know there's one thing I want to talk to you about because it changed your life. It changed your hometown, and it certainly changed the world. December 7th, 1941. What do you remember about that day and how you found out?
Well, I'd gone to church that morning, and right after church, I walked home, turned on the radio to a professional football game. The announcer was saying, "Ladies and gentlemen, the Japanese have bombed Pearl Harbor." And, of course, we had no knowledge of what was the damage that was being done to our hometown at that time. And, of course, we found out a couple of days later that we had lost 3 kids off my hometown of Holyoke on the Arizona. And right away, the emotions went high as soon as we can. We were going to go kill those people. We were going to go get even. And kids, people today, society, the correct society says, you can't say things like that. Well, you have to be true. And the truth was, we hated those people at that time, and we were going to go destroy them.
And when that happened, you were, I guess, a week shy of your 16th birthday, so you weren't old enough to go in yet. But you mentioned the 3 young men from your hometown mm-hmm. who were killed on the Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there are more than 2,400 Americans who were killed on Oahu that day.
Yeah.
1,177 on the Arizona. Is there something you'd like to share with us about those young men and who they were and maybe what their futures might have looked like?
Well, in the Depression, there were no jobs. So these guys would join the service, and a lot of them would join the Navy because of the glory, you know, getting away from dirt. And Richard Owens, the older one, would come back into town in his uniform. And, of course, we idolized how he looked in his navy whites. The other guy, Keith, he married a Holyoke girl, so he got classified as being from Holyoke. And Johnny Zeiler was an all-star athlete. He's probably one of the finest high school athletes in my mind that I ever saw in the state. You know, single wing, he could run, he could pass, he could kick. Basketball, he was all-state. Track, he could run the quarter mile. Whale of a softball pitcher. And he was just such a loss to us kids in terms of our idolizing that it really got us.
And just to put it in perspective for people listening, when you say one of the finest high school athletes you've ever seen in the state of Colorado, that comes after decades of coaching here in Colorado and also officiating football, yeah, basketball, and baseball,
yes,
in Colorado.
Yes.
So you've seen thousands of high school athletes.
Awesome.
So he was a guy you looked up to.
He was our idol. And his dad had the ice cream. They made the ice. And, of course, none of us had refrigerators, electric. So we would get the guy to come by with a block of ice, and we'd put it in. And, of course, people started to get electric refrigerators, and the ice business went down. And Johnny's dad just said, Johnny, I can't afford to pay you. So Johnny joined the Navy, and he happened to be in that unfortunate place.
And so you go from seeing these guys in their sparkling uniforms and saying, boy, that's really neat. You probably hadn't fathomed the idea that they could be killed like that, right?
No. Had no idea. We knew in high school we'd get current events paper. We knew somewhat was going on in Europe, and we knew about Lend-Lease and all those things, but it was so far removed from us. You know, without the emotional drive to get you into the service and go protect your country, it's just something that's hard to fathom, yes.
Were you thinking about it already, even at almost 16?
A little bit, but I thought a lot more of it when my dad joined the Seabees in 1942 and left my mom home with six kids. So then I joined the Navy in March of 43. I had my stuff from high school. They said I could graduate. So I went and left mom at home with five kids.
Hey, if dad can do it, I can do it too, huh?
Yeah.
And you can joke about it now, but how significant was that when your father is going off to war? And here you're at home as the oldest of six kids trying to help your mom survive.
I got very concerned. I don't know how it affected my other kids, the other brothers and sisters, but it began to bother me. And Dad had said he was going in so that us kids wouldn't have to go to war. And they did. Our population thought, oh, we'll whip those people in 6 months. It didn't work that way. And but we all began to think about it. We were going to probably have to go to the service.
And where did they send your dad? Where did he end up in the war?
My dad's CB unit was on the island invasion of Kwajalein. And then because of his age, when that all quieted down, they were starting to kick those old 45-year-old guys out of the service and send him home.
I'll ask you later about the time you got to see him during World War II after you were both wearing those Navy uniforms. And when you say, you know, you enlisted and you went in even before you were supposed to graduate high school.
Yes.
Was there any question in your mind about the branch of service you were going to choose? Was there a reason the Navy was your choice?
No doubt, Navy. I wanted no part of the mud.
Uh-huh.
And I thought the Navy offered more. I don't know.
And I'm just guessing that coming from northeastern Colorado, you'd never been on a ship before?
No, maybe a rowboat.
Uh-huh, a real raft in the river.
Yeah.
What was your welcome to the Navy experience, and did it match your expectations?
Well, you know, you're 17, you don't know anybody. I went in the Navy. Luckily, it was, I think, about a third of the University of Colorado football team. These guys are a little older, and a couple of those guys said, here, we got this young 17-year-old kid. We got to look after him. So those guys did. They looked after me through boot camp and all, and they're lifelong friends, and I don't know how it would have been if I hadn't had them kind of take me by the hand and go along. And then, of course, as I got a little farther in the service and got into hospital corps school, where I had to study like mad, because we were in school studying all different branches and phases of medicine from 7 in the morning till 6 at night, and then we still had to study. You begin to not look at a lot of other things, you're buried in your studies. So then you began to look forward to your next assignments, what's going to happen.
Where was your core school?
Farragut, Idaho. You know where that is?
I've talked to a lot of vets who trained there.
Most beautiful lake in the United States, 40 miles north of Coeur d'Alene. still pristine. The Navy still has a secret sonar base there. When we got to Farragut, 15 inches of snow on the ground. We marched through the snow, and then, of course, with all the lava rock around up there, it melts off pretty fast.
Were you eager to be deployed to go help in this effort? Were you anxious about it? What do you remember?
Well, I wanted to get out of the routine of Corps school, so my first assignment was Naval Hospital, Seattle.
And you'll hear about what he did there when we come back. Glenn Stenson of Denver, Colorado is our guest today. Still to come, the unique way he helped the wounded from one of the Pacific's biggest battles, and his connection to survivors of World War II's worst sea disaster. Find photos of Glenn then and now at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this.